You know, I just want Natalie to come sing and Avril to meditate me in every morning, and life would be okay, yes? You know, the beautiful music and the beautiful meditation also contained a challenge within it, though. And that's what we do here. How many people would like to have your life be uncommon? Not the ordinary life, not the same old life that you've always lived, but something beautiful, holy, sacred, and magnificent, full of light. How many want that? Well, one of you. We're all striving for something holy and beautiful and magnificent, and when we come together, we share stories, we share songs, we share meditations and messages, all with the idea of empowering each other into the greatest expression of God known as you. And I know more than one of you wants that, but I'll let our board chair absolutely lead the charge to that idea. We are in a series. This is the fourth in our series, Our Unfolding Spiritual Nature. The power of a story to heal and transform. How many have heard the last two stories we told? Were you transformed and healed by the presence of those who got up and sat in this chair and absolutely said, here's where I was, here's where I am, here's how I got there, and here's how you can do it too? It was empowering, and we've got three more, and today is no exception. Look out. You know, the preacher has to get out of the way because the lady's going to come and she's going to do a little preaching of her own. But I will introduce you to her in just a moment. We have remembered some things. Over this series, we have remembered some things. And I want to go through that list of what we've remembered. Let's put them up there. We have remembered that we are not defined by circumstances. None of us in this room is defined by what has happened to you or what's happening currently in your life. It never has been. You never will be. We are defined by what? One thing only, consciousness. The song of freedom, the life of freedom, the life uncommon that was sung about was telling us to quit focusing our life on the chains, on the difficulties, on the obstacles, on the people, and put your life only on that which is true, holy, sacred, and true since the beginning of time, the Alpha and the Omega, that is you, incarnated here on earth. Number two, we learned that we are not confined by conditions or our history. You are the product not of what happened to you, but the consciousness that you brought to what happened to you. We're only defined by our conscious choices, yes? Number three, we listened and we heard and we remembered that we cannot be silenced by struggle, by ignorance, anybody's ignorance, by any challenge or any storm. When we rely on the innate power of God that has chose to do business as us, as you, as me, as the we that is in this room and the we that is collectively across the whole planet. Yes? The mind of God had a thought. In the beginning, the Big Bang was a thought within the mind of God, and God thought you into creation and this moment into creation. It all springs from the consciousness of the one power and the one presence that is light, that is love, that is good, that is life, that is good, that is you. And then four, we remembered that there's more to us than we've ever imagined. How many people, as a result of things that have happened to in your life, are more of you as a result? I hope everybody's hand goes up, because we can use what is happening in life for our greatest good. We teach in this community, nothing and no one is against you. Everything and everyone is for you. But you've got to flip the switch of consciousness to turn that around, and that's not an easy journey. Today's story is going to absolutely help you flip that switch a little bit more. The stories that we've heard over the past few weeks and over the next 3 weeks remind us of our inherent goodness. You were born good and holy, and somewhere along the line you forgot, and things happened in your life to keep you awake. Who's awake today? I hope everybody is awake, and if you're not awake, well, I hope that Sabrina, when she comes up, will wake you all up tremendously. We have demonstrated and remembered the truth that the choice of spirit over condition always, always pays off. The choice of spirit over humanity. The choice of spirit over limitation. Today's story is no exception. Our lives, everyone in this room, our lives are the demonstration of possibilities envisioned. Possibilities embodied. See, we see the vision. We begin to make it our own dream and our own vision, and then possibilities energized through the thoughts that we're feeding it, through the feelings that we're feeling it, through the actions that we are taking. Then we get to the place of it expressed. Fifth unity principle, the truth that I know is the truth that I demonstrate. It's one thing to come into this room and have pretty ideas and pretty thoughts and pretty theories, to listen to a powerful story. It's another to take it outside these doors and to live them, to be them. If what we've done in this room stays in this room, you've wasted the story. And Sabrina won't have any part of it, and neither will I. Let's take the good and let's go out into the world and be the change that we want to see, to be the cause of a greater reality. Because we're not defined by anything that's happening in the country. We're not defined by anything that's happening in the world. Do you believe that? These prayers that we share, these meditations and these songs, your life is the energy of those prayers and meditation in action. Truth and theology, not just espoused, but truth and theology implemented. Our collective stories, we are an anthology of hope. Look around. We, as a collective, are an anthology of hope, of triumph, of oneness, of knowing that we are not defined by anything except the consciousness that we cultivate collectively together. Yes, we are more powerful than anything the world can throw at us. Next slide, please. And so we say together, what tried to break us became our strength. Say that with me. What tried to break us became our strength. Next, what tried to silence us became our anthem. What tried to erase us became our canvas, and what tried to bury us became the soil of our healing. We can turn lemons into lemonade, but it means consciousness. We can turn experience into heaven. We can turn hell into heaven. And we don't deny that you may be going through hell, but the possibility of heaven has been placed right there in your heart and your mind. How many people remember the story of Joseph and the coat of many colors? Not just the Broadway play. It's a little older than the Broadway play. This story of Joseph and his brothers stands as a radiant example of resilience, of power, of strength, of forgiveness, and of vision. The very tools that we use to move from hell to move into heaven on earth. Joseph was betrayed by his brothers. He was cast into a pit. Anybody resonate with that? You feel like life has just thrown you in a hole? He was sold into slavery, and he was unjustly imprisoned. Anybody feel like you're bound in your life or have in the past been bound by a circumstance or a condition or somebody's ignorance or somebody's opinion that you were in a prison? The reality is you may be in a prison, but the door is unlocked. But we have to know that the key to unlocking that door is within us. We're one thought, we're one breath, we're one feeling away from being free again, as the song and the meditation told us. Joseph did not see life as a series of unfair punishments. How many people have ever, I'll be the first to put my hand up, I lived a good portion of my life as a victim. I am a victim to circumstances. It didn't work so good. And I got really comfortable in hell. I got really comfortable in telling my story of victimhood. And then somebody turned to me and said, it sucks to be you. And I realized that I needed to tell a different story. I needed to find something greater within me that did not define myself by what happened to me, but by what was happening within me. And Joseph demonstrates this with these words that have lived with me, that moment in time where I made the shift from being a victim to being a victor. This is what it says in Scripture. Let's go ahead and put it up there. Together we say, what you intended for harm, God has transformed for good. Other translations, maybe a little more familiar, said, what man has used for evil, God has used for good. How does God do this? How does God do this? Through consciousness, the answer to every question I'm going to ask today. Consciousness, the power of what's going on between your ears and what's going on between the heartbeats. It is consciousness. What is happening to you may be evil, may be wrong, may be bad, may be violent. But what happens to you and the next breath, and the next is what's going to be going on within your consciousness. In his declaration, Joseph embodies the truth that nothing in life is wasted. It's all energy, right? We teach that. Everything in life is energy. Building, lights, Judy, Sam, Jerry, all of us are the energy of God, the one inception of life itself that had a thought and thought this into existence through us, around us, and more importantly, as us. Don't waste any part of it. It's all valuable. Could it be that every experience that you've ever had was valuable or had value, whether you knew it, realized it, or used it or not? Every challenge in your life is a stepping stone to higher ground. Every challenge is a stepping stone to go higher. Now suspend the yeah buts. I can feel the yeah buts in the room. Because we want to really quickly run back to that story. You don't know how bad it was that happened to me. Let me tell you, with some of the stories that you're going to hear today and hear next week, I have hangnail problems in my life. We're not defined by hangnails. We're defined by consciousness. Every wound is a doorway to compassion. That is our destination. Compassion lives in oneness, kindness, and love. And every wound that you have, every scar is a doorway to a greater capacity for compassion. And every injustice is an invitation to trust Spirit's larger plan, faith. I have faith that love is more powerful than what's happening. I have faith that God is more powerful than what's happening. I have faith that what is within me, greater is that which is within me than that which is in the world. Do we really believe that? But how soon we run back to the victim story, away from the empowering story. When we live in the empowering place, we live as Joseph did, as Sabrina lived. We rise above, we triumph over, and we achieve more than we ever thought was possible. We surpass any limits, we defy expectations, and we live beyond the boundaries that others have drawn for us. We ascend above the consciousness of others that cannot see. Edwin Markham gave me a quote that helped me get out of hell and get into a place of heaven. And let's read this together. They drew a line to shut me out, a rebel, a heretic, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took them in. The world's drawing lots of lines, folks. Have you noticed it? Line, you, me, us, them. Our job is more important than ever before on the planet to draw a larger circle. And in that circle is love, is compassion, is forgiveness. The stories that we're sharing from this platform are stories of empowerment that draw a bigger circle, even when it doesn't make any sense. Today, we recognize that in this world, we may be victimized, but we don't have to be a victim. Now, that's not my line. I stole it from Sabrina Frances White. When she said that to me in our pre-interview for today, you may be victimized, but you don't have to be a victim. I said, that'll preach, lady. That'll preach. Life sometimes puts us in situations where harm comes our way. We don't deny that. We're not saying it's not hot and I'm not in hell. You're in hell, but you're one breath away from getting out of it. Words will be spoken that wound you. Actions will be taken that betray. Circumstances will arrive that are absolutely so unfair. And in those moments, we may indeed be victimized. Joseph was victimized, yes? He refused to let that become his identity. That's how he rose. He chose not to stay in resentment, to live forever in the shadow of injustice, but to rise into the light of possibility. And when he did, the whole universe conspired in his favor. The multitude of support and resources showed up that he was able to rise into the light of possibility. His story is our story. And when his brothers came before Joseph in his elevated position, he had every right to condemn, to put to death, and to challenge. He didn't do that. He forgave them. And he sat and created a feast for them. This is the story of victim to victor. that we're all on, the hero's journey. Let's next slide, please. This is called the alchemy of spirit. This is the alchemy of changing and moving and transforming harm into good, pain into purpose, injustice into wisdom, betrayal into compassion, and hardship into leadership. Sabrina Francis White is a leader in this church, and she's a powerful leader in this church. Not because life was easy, but because she chose to be the great spiritual alchemist. I will not take what happened to me and make it my story or define me. I will become more. Living as a victim is a choice, and it's not one that she chose to make. Will you please welcome to this platform our beautiful leader of our LGBTQ ministry, Sabrina Francis White. You may have seen the panic on my face. I was looking for her all around here, and it's like, you know what? I can't carry this without her today. Good morning, Sabrina.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about your life today.
If I get up on the chair first, that might help me. Yeah.
Okay. You know, the community, sometimes we all just need a little help up, and we lean on
just
each other.
Little.
Tell me about your life as it is today, maybe your experience here at Unity North, and what you do currently in your life.
Well, I have to say, for me coming to Unity North, it's a community of love and warmth. And when I started seeking that community, I wasn't sure what it would feel like. And it didn't look the same. It was different from what I was used to. It sounded different. And I remember telling Richard, well, it looks a little different. And he said, well, just hang around a little longer. So today for me, it's about stepping into something and being open to what is different, being willing to explore what that would feel like, what that would look like, and the possibility of what I'm willing to learn. That's what I think about when I think about this community. I'm going to learn something from everyone that comes in contact, and that's what I have to stay open to. So I thank Unity North for opening the doors for me to be comfortable.
So how long have you been married?
33 and a half years.
To your beloved, where is she? There she is, Lynette.
Yes.
We celebrate. 33 years is above average these days.
Thank you.
I remember the moment that Sabrina came and was in Coffee and Connection, and we had that very conversation. We're not too sure about you. We're not too sure about this community, but we're going to hang around for a while. And what I meant were two women of strength, two women of power, two women of courage, and two women of vision. And they were going to put us through the paces to make sure we are what we say we are. I value that in both of them. Now, peachy keen life today. Life has not always been peachy keen. Can you go back and tell us a little bit about the circumstances of your very early life?
I'm the middle girl of three girls, and my mother had us young. At the time that she had us, my two sisters were placed with my grandmother. I, because I was not in the same area, was placed with another caretaker as my mother was trying to make her way in the world, with the agreement that she would send money, she would take care of me, and once she got settled, she would also come and get me. When that time came, however, she was told with her list of bills, guess what? If you can pay all of this, you can have her. If not, I can take you to court. My mother didn't have the means to do that. She didn't have the means to fight. So I stayed with the caretaker. She's the only mother I knew, and I call her my first mother. I knew her and her family. That was my family. She did not and could not have kids, so I was given anything and everything.
Was there conversation about your biological mother, or was she basically erased from your mind?
I never knew my biological mother. It was never mentioned in the house. This was the family. When she died, and this woman was, she was a woman in the community. It was a time as a black woman, she had a business, she owned a lot of property. I understood that you worked. And I didn't know any limitations about color till the integration started. You know, the house we lived in was expansive. She had a business up front. She did a rooming house in the back. And the agreement was with the rooming house was all the women. I got rotating babysitters. So you learned early to be very flexible with people when you're an only child because it's a survival mechanism. You have to understand the person that's in front of you.
Let me ask a question. When your mother, make sure we understand, your mother came to get you back, and she was very young still. She was denied her child. Is that correct?
She was.
So basically, in my words, you were kidnapped.
Yes. Wouldn't have said it in that point, but yes. She couldn't fight it, so she said, okay. My first mother did not die. She died of cancer as I was going to fourth grade. And I remember standing at the time behind the door sill, and I was listening to my aunts, and they were discussing my future. Well, you know, as an only child, you're nosy. And I happened to hear them say, she doesn't belong to us. She's not a part of our family. We can't take care of her. They need to come get her, call her people. And my mind at the time was, what do you mean? You are my people. These are the only people I had known since infancy. So as I'm standing there trying to understand, you don't want me. Did you ever want me? Did you ever love me? Maybe she was the only one that loved me.
So let me get real clear here. This was the first time you heard, you are not part of this family.
Yes.
We don't want you. You're not needed. And you're not part of our tribe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. How did that feel?
It was devastating. My mind was trying to reconcile what I felt. I felt very hurt. I felt very disappointed. And I felt like I couldn't trust what I had seen. And I also felt I was not safe because I didn't know who my people were that coming. This was a concept to me. And everything I knew was suddenly maybe not real. When my mother died, my first mom died.
Not your biological
not
mother.
Not my biological
mother. This is
mother.
The mother who
this had is the This is the caretaker. I'll give her a caretaker. I came home and I walked in the door and this woman was there and she said, I am your grandmother. I am here to take you home. I thought, but I am home. This is all I know that's home. So where will I go now? She packed up my whole world in a small Samsonite suitcase in one box. And we got on the Greyhound bus heading to my new home.
And you were in fourth grade?
Ending third grade, going into fourth grade.
Okay.
As we sat on the bus, she began to explain to me who my people were. She had not been the aunt I visited on the road trip. She was my grandmother. The sisters, the cousins were not my cousins. These are my two sisters. And I thought, wow, my little mind, the child is thinking, but you took all my stuff. I have nothing. And as I'm listening, I thought, oh, well, I got a grandmother now. I'd been an only child. Everybody else had grandmothers. I didn't have a grandmother. I had a grandmother. And wow, everybody else had siblings. I now had two sisters, a younger sister and an older sister. I would not have to take my big red cart of toys and find someone to play with me.
Or so you thought.
So I thought.
So what was this new situation like at a third or fourth grader?
When I got to our home, my grandparents, both were raging alcoholics. And my grandfather was a very stoic man when he was not drinking. But when he was drinking, the world was he was in love with everybody. My grandmother was very quiet, and she would give me love, but I was the third kid out. She had to take me, and I was one more mouth to feed. And I had come from everything, and suddenly I was in an environment of poverty and subsistent living. I learned quickly that when you people are drinking, sometimes there is no meal. So I learned that I had to go through the sofa cushions, her purse, whatever it was. If I could scrounge up $1.80, I could make me a meal during those days because I could get a pack of hot dogs, a small bag of rice, and a can of pork and beans. I was going to eat, okay?
What was the energy in that home? What did you feel? You thought you're going to have no playmates with your sisters and your grandmother and your grandfather. What was the energy that you experienced?
It was very hurtful. It was very disappointing. And I learned what it was to be attacked or bullied because it was always two against one. Also learned not to expect that just because that was the conversation on TV, this was not life. Okay? It wasn't the Brady Bunch. So I had to adjust to who and what was in front of me and the life I lived. When my grandfather moved out of the house, I had my grandmother, and I learned to see in living color what it meant to be a victim and to live in that space of fear day by day.
The words that you gave me earlier in our conversation is you were tolerated, you were not wanted, you were dismissed, you were excess baggage, and that you were living in total survival because you were not of this family. They did not treat you like family, that you were the outcast. Is that true?
That is correct. I was by choice. You got to take her. She don't belong to us, so you need to come get her. She belongs to you.
So no food. You had to care for yourself. You had to survive. You were living in poverty. You were living in neglect, and there was absolutely no warmth. Yes?
I had some warmth from my grandmother, but it was different from me to my sisters. So I could feel that difference as a child. I understood that I cost you more money to feed. I understood that you didn't have an option but to take me, because the community my grandmother lived in, it was like, those are your grandchildren, so you need to be responsible for all of them.
Now, this is maybe a little tender. You mentioned earlier that there was an issue with a male. Was it your grandfather?
No.
No?
It was my stepfather.
Okay.
And my grandfather had moved out. My stepfather moved in. And I learned what it meant to feel a little bit of fear. Your Aunt Hannah's grew up. Something is not right. But he had victimized, my grandfather victimized my grandmother, but he was very good at doing it. And he was domestic abuse, and he kept my grandmother in fear. But when he decided to come into a room with just me, in a very small room with a single bed, I was reading my books. My world was books. That's where I lived. That's where I could escape. But that particular day, I had picked the back bedroom, and I just wanted to sit there in the quiet and read. And when he stepped into the room, if you have any experience, you know your antennas come up. Something is not right. And I thought as I sat there, I have a choice. I either am going to go along with this, or I am going to fight. Well, my first mother had taught me one thing. Life is about possibilities. But you create them. It's your choice. You can choose to lie down and roll over, or you can choose to do something different. And I figured I had one choice, that window or the door. And I was willing to take the window if it got down to it. When he realized I was not going to play ball, I got to walk away that day. That did not mean I was safe. And suddenly I realized, oh my, I need to find a way out. My grandmother came to us and said, you know, your mother wants to take you and raise all of you. My sister said, well, no, I don't want to go. I thought, I'll go. I didn't know if I was going, moving from the frying pan to the fire. I did not know. But it was a possibility that maybe it would be better than where I was at.
And you were in what grade at this point?
I was going to seventh grade at that point.
Okay.
So I, you know, my mother, grandmother put me on the bus. She was like, okay, great, one down. I got two to live with. And put me on a Greyhound. I had my little bag, my little lunch and coins. And she said, okay, you do not sit next to any men, and you sit up front. And we made it all the way to Chicago, where my mother was, and it came in later.
As a seventh grade girl, you were put on a bus to Chicago by yourself.
By myself, yep.
And you didn't know really why you were going.
Well, I knew I was going because I wanted to go. Okay, my grandmother was like, can you take them? And I'm like, they don't want to go, I'm going.
And what were the feelings that you had?
I was excited. The bus ride was stressful because every time people got on and off, you had to readjust how you sit and what happened. And I, of course, learning from my stepfather, I knew sometimes you were not safe. But when I got to Chicago and I heard the call, it said, next stop, Chicago. I was in panic. I had not seen my biological mother. I only had a picture. I had heard her voice on the phone, but I didn't know who she was. So when I got off the bus, I'm standing there, and it seemed like my mind went blank. I was trying to remember someone, but I couldn't. And all of a sudden, I heard her voice. And I just started walking toward my name. And when I got to her, I froze because I thought, oh my, what if I was wrong? What if I made the wrong mistake? I'm a long way from all my family now. And I stood there. And as I stood there, she called my name and I heard her. She bent down and she embraced me. It was in that moment that she had this wonderful, intoxicating smell. It was actually Estee Lauder Youth Dew perfume. But in that second of that embrace, I realized I smelled this before. It's the only memory I have of my mother as an infant or a toddler. She bought me a two-piece coral corduroy suit. And I loved stroking that corduroy. And when she picked me up, when she put it on me as a child, she embraced me. And that was the same scent. So I knew my mother always loved me. My mother had always been there, no matter what anybody said, no matter what she went through, to be there or not, I knew she loved me and I was going to be all right.
I want to put a light on that. There is a still small voice. There is a smell, a scent, a hearing, a feeling, a knowledge that no matter what's going on, my mother loves me. That innate spiritual essence was driving you to say, I'm not going to stay. I'm reminded of an Ananias Ninquit quote that said, and the time came when the fear of blooming was outweighed by the pain of staying tight in the bud. Something was moving and stirring and absolutely alive within Sabrina that she listened to. She had to listen to make it to the arms of her mother. Yes?
Yes.
How was that experience?
The experience was empowering. My mother had not had the chance to raise us, and now she had the chance. And she poured everything she could into making sure that we had an armor around us to survive the life as women, to survive as a black woman, to understand racism. My mother would say to me, she said, you will be victimized. It will be by society, it may be by friends, it may be by family. Understand that that is a given. You do not, however, have to be a victim. It is your choice. You must have the courage to step forward. So she spent time sharing her life. She didn't sugarcoat it. She said, here's what I went through. Here's how I handled it. And then she made us think about how would you handle it. How would you show up? And understand that, yes, as your color, they will see that first. But that just means you got to work a little harder. And understand, even in that, the playing field will never be leveled. But that's okay, too. It is about everybody and it's bracing. And for me, racism was something I'm like, okay, it's like air. Air is always there. I can choose to say it's toxic or it's not. And for me, air was always about light. It was about the next thing that was coming. But racism is something that can be very insidious, and how it shows up. So for me in college, it showed up with a professor saying, I don't believe you wrote that paper. Who wrote that paper for you? Did you pay somebody to write it? And I had a choice again. Do I just let it go and take the grade? No. So I went down to the dean of students, and as I sat there and to have to go point by point to tell her and substantiate my research, I still sat there and thought, now you're going to make a fair call. But fair call or not, I will not sit still. Okay. Many times with racism, someone said to me, oh, we don't fight. You're privileged if you don't have to fight. But as a black, I have to fight. To be visible, to be heard, to be accepted. Okay. But it does not mean that I'm going to be allow someone to tell me. I resist the poison of hate, the poison of suspecting everybody and coloring every brush with racism. You will not taint my spirit that way. I will not hold that toxicity in my being. So I will resist with love. I will resist with extending my hand, hoping that you will extend yours back. I will resist with understanding, taking a moment to be willing to understand Who are you? I don't know. Everybody's got a story in here. Some people will look at me and see my color first. They'll see I'm gay first. Some may say women. I don't know what you will see, but you know what is clear? That is not my story to carry. I need to just show up for you.
Sabrina said a number of times, and go ahead and make some noise for that. In our interview, she says, I will not allow others to define me. And she said, always know who you are, because ignorance is going to show up in your field. Blindness is going to show up in your field. What are some of the things that you learned through your childhood and through some of the experiences that you've mentioned? And there are 100 stories that she shared about having to deal with the bigotry of racism and the short-sightedness of homophobia. And people who look like me treating her as less than because she was a woman. What are the things that you have learned, the most important things for this congregation to know?
Be willing to be open. Be willing to be honest. We each are responsible for who we are today. Whatever your story is, whatever your story is today or yet to be developed, be willing to look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself the hard questions. That's what it took for me. I did not, and my convictions are not based on anything but my experience. But I enjoy exploring what the possibilities are. Because, see, for me, that allows me to know one thing. I can create a space for forgiveness because I understand everyone in here has the ability to change. And it's that change that allows me to give you grace as I understand who you are. And no, I will not be defined by anyone. I will stand on my own. Sometimes it's been lonely. I'll be honest. Sometimes I had to look around and say, I'm the only one standing here, but okay. Somebody will catch up, I hope. But I also have my courage and strength to me is coming from the willingness to be wrong. I don't have all the answers. I don't know it all. But guess what? What I think I know today, it probably won't be the same thing tomorrow. Because we get to learn something new every day.
I invite the band to come back up and Natalie to come up to close us with a song. What role did forgiveness play? You know, you had to forgive a long line of people who had wronged you and treated you wrongly. What part does forgiveness play in you being the woman you are today?
It allows you to move forward and to grow. I flew home purposely to forgive my grandmother. When I got off the plane and sat with her, and I shared with her how, as a child, what I saw and felt from her, what I experienced from her, and she said, I didn't see it that way. I didn't feel it that way. I don't remember doing it that way. The forgiveness allowed me to understand it's okay if you don't feel it that way. I know what I experienced, but I will love you because of what you were going through. But I am going to release you. I'm going to release any hurt and anger that you caused me. And I will still love you.
What is the result for you of having the courage, the strength, and the love to do that hand of forgiveness?
I get to enjoy life with people. I get to be able to extend my hand and my heart and stay open and to learn. I came to this church because of the principles, but I realized the principles, that's kind of how I believe. That's how I've lived my life. That's what I've survived and how I survived. And I'm excited when I meet new people. I want to know, who are you? I want to take a moment and listen, because if I listen, I will learn. And that, to me, has been what sustained me. I don't need to have a lot of people. I just need to respect what's there and to know that the possibility, it will change. There will be something new on the page. I don't know what that page is going to be, but it is up to me to look at it and be willing to step forward in my life. And that's all I can own. The rest, well, that's not me.